On this episode of The Edge, Clear Edge CEO Leslie Vickery interviews Megan McCann, CEO and founder of McCann Partners, an IT recruitment firm. Megan shares how she landed in the IT recruitment industry, the reality behind being an entrepreneur and owning your own business, advice Megan would give to business owners looking to sell their company, and so much more. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Leslie Vickery here, CEO of Clear Edge Marketing, and I am joined by Megan McCann, who is the CEO and founder of McCann Partners. Thank you for joining us today, Megan.
Thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Well, obviously, we know each other very well, not only as friends, but also as co-founders together with Jane Hamner of ARA, which is an organization focused on attracting, retaining, and advancing women in tech. So, Megan, you've been named to the Tech 100. You've also been named to Blue Sky Innovations Vault, the Blue Network. You're kind of a mover and shaker in the Chicago tech community. Even at lunch today, we were with the ITA. They said, your name is everywhere as it relates to Chicago and talent acquisition. So I'm thrilled to have you here. And with that, I'd love to talk to you a little bit about your career path and transition. So how you got to become known as this leader in technology and talent acquisition. So let's talk about your career path and how you landed in both Chicago and technology. So you started your company, McCann Partners, over 6 years ago after owning another staffing firm. And prior to that, you were in recruitment for your alma mater. How did you go from college recruitment to the IT staffing industry?
The easiest answer, it was happenstance. It was not a path I set forward to follow. It was, I think, maybe the stars aligning in a way that I wouldn't have anticipated. I went to a liberal arts college and studied English, but did not really have a direction I wanted to go. I wasn't going to be a writer. I wasn't going to be an educator, but I really wanted to work with people and help people. And just literally by default started working in the admission office at my alma mater, Wittenberg University, and essentially felt like it was time for me to go to the big city and found my way to Chicago because of having a lot of friends here. But my foray into recruiting and staffing was incidental. I'm going to date myself, but I found an ad in the Tribune back when we used paper to find jobs, and I applied. It was the size of a quarter, and someone took a chance on me, and I literally fell into it and have loved every moment since then. But it was not intentional. It was a means to an end for me. It was a way to leverage the experience I had postgraduate to get to the big city. But once I was in the space, I just found that I loved it. It was always changing and I was good at it.
Right. And I've heard you talk a lot about your passion and love for helping other people, you know, find jobs, find their way within their career. And not only, so you went from obviously working within Wittenberg into IT recruitment and owning your own company. So really a full circle within your career. And it isn't easy. You and I, we talk about this a lot, being entrepreneurs. And sometimes, though, I think it can often be glamorized, owning your own company. People say, oh, you own your own company. Isn't that fantastic? Isn't that great? And while it is fantastic and great, the glamorization of it can be a challenge. Even, I think, especially in our industry, in the technology industry, you're constantly reading about who has the biggest funding, who's growing at what pace, what's happening, and some of these companies you and I know very well. So what advice would you give others looking to start their own company?
So I have to take one step back from that question to say that I come from a family of company people. So we aren't an entrepreneurial family. Mm-hmm. There's no one else that has started a business. So when I made the decision first to start a company as a sweat equity member of a team after I came to Chicago, it was a really challenging conversation to have with my family because they didn't understand it. No one else had done it. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have an appreciation for why I was willing to take the risk and why I was so committed to doing it. And so hindsight always being 2020, when I decided ultimately to start my own organization, I did it because I wanted to open a door for myself versus waiting for someone else to do it for me. And for a really long time, that was not how I looked at entrepreneurship or an ability to make an impact. So I think that's the thing I would remind people that are thinking about starting their own business. It is glamorized. I think sometimes my family thinks that I can take any time off whenever I want because it's mine, but that's not how it works.
Right.
You don't leave it when you leave the office. It's with you all of the time. So you have to make a really conscious effort to walk away from it to give yourself some perspective. So I would encourage those thinking about it to do it because they want it so passionately and because they want to open that door for themselves and because they believe in what they're setting out to do.
Right. I think that's it's a very valid point. You're always on, and you need to be prepared for that. I think my husband Colin reminds me of that. Wherever we go, he's like, wait a minute, you are always on. Like, I am. I may run into someone I know. It's because we have our own company, and we're out there trying to build that and grow it. So I think people often ask, you know, when you are kind of mentoring, and we both mentor a lot of people who are starting their companies or running their companies, and they'll ask us questions about things that they need to do as they're starting it. So for example, they may need contracts, or they may need, you know, I was never in sales, or I never ran my financials, or whatever it may be, they just didn't have the experience in. And I think they always think, I need to take on a lot of business partners to compensate for areas that I don't have the expertise. And I always kind of say, well, you're giving away more than you need to. You really don't need to. You can find people who can help you, advisors and coaches. Agreed. And mentors and so forth. But what surprised you the most when you started your company? Now, obviously, you were a partner in another firm, but then it's different. You had someone running financials, you had help on the sales front, you were really strong on the recruiting and operations side. What would you say surprised you most that you thought you didn't have day one, but actually love doing?
That's a great question. The one that immediately comes to mind is funding. And while I did not wish to take on a partner, I also started my business in such a way that I could scale it without a financial commitment from the beginning. And that's not always the case depending on the business model. I was very conservative on the front end because I didn't want to take on anyone else as a partner. I wanted to do it on my own. Mm-hmm. But there was a pinnacle point probably 4 years ago where I had an opportunity in front of me for a project that if I would have said yes to, I could have driven the business into the ground from an accounts receivable perspective. Mm-hmm. So I had to find a way to go out to the marketplace and get a line of credit and work through that process. I had no experience doing mm-hmm. that. Yes, I had a mortgage, and yes, I had a credit card, but those are very different ways of presenting your business than going in front of a banker mm-hmm. who wants to evaluate your business plan to fund you, to give you money, even in a loan. And so it's a humbling experience sometimes. And we hear it a lot from female founders. What access to cash do they have? I, again, was not looking for an investor. I was looking for money to help offset accounts receivable.
Right.
But it was still a struggle. I was small. I'm a small business. Big box banks don't always want to give funding to mm-hmm. someone of my size. And so it was humbling, and it gave me pause because I had never done it. But much like anything else, when it comes to being in business or being an entrepreneur or a parent, a sister, a friend, it doesn't matter. Sometimes you just have to do it on the fly. You don't always have the answers. There's not a playbook for it.
Right.
There's not a manual, or everyone would be doing it. So you just navigate as best you can through that process and learn from it. So I think the financial piece for me, while I was involved with it at the last company, I didn't have to worry about the money being in the account.
Right.
I only had to manage the money that was in the account. So understanding how to work that component was really telling.
Excellent point. And speaking of, I guess, lessons learned, and, you know, obviously companies, as they're scaling and growing, the financial aspect is pretty critical to running the company. And I think people take for granted that it just self-runs and don't have to stay up at night worrying about cash flow. As business owners, I would say for me, sales and cash flow are probably the two biggest things I worry about, and they go hand in hand. So with that, lessons learned, speaking of which, you had three partners. So you were one of three partners at your last firm. And a lot of people talk about selling their company, growing it to sell, looking at different stages. Are we ready to sell? Are we not ready to sell? We talk to companies, our clients all the time about that. But you guys actually, you did it. You sold it. And if you had a crystal ball, I guess advice you would give other people potentially listening here who are growing their company, scaling it to sale, or considering, do I have a 3 or 5 year plan to sell? What advice would you say, or what would you do differently as it relates to the sale of your company, if anything?
Differently would be my expectation post sale. Mm. So I think fundamentally, anyone that's looking to sell a business needs to understand that what happens after the sale will result most often in something different. And I don't think you walk into the transaction thinking like that. I surely didn't. And I don't think the two gentlemen that I was partnering with did. Mm-hmm. And so I think that is really eye-opening, because you go from nurturing, growing, leading, mentoring an organization, making all of the decisions based on what's going to happen and why, even if they're not right decisions, you're still in the driver's seat,
right,
to not being in the driver's seat. And in some cases, not even being able to influence. That's not always the case. Every situation is different. But I think you have to be ready for the fact that your impact is going to be different and your influence is going to be different. And you have to be accepting of that, because you're giving that away when you're selling the organization.
Right.
So it's a conscious decision that you're doing it, but it doesn't make it any easier sometimes.
Right. I would argue, I think sometimes people negotiate, they try to negotiate in a certain level of commitment and
yes,
ownership and so forth. But at the end of the day, you've sold your company.
You've sold.
So
you've,
there's someone else in charge.
Yeah, it's like you've nurtured, as you know, I don't have kids. So you put everything into this child, which
right,
is your company, and you get it to a certain age and then you hand it to someone else.
Right.
And it's really hard to let go. There's an emotional connection there, whether you want to admit it or not. It's there because
right,
you've invested so much of yourself into it. And I can talk all day about the fact that sometimes I need to have less emotion and less emotional investment. But it's hard to practice that all
right,
the time.
So on the flip side of that, I guess, is there anything that you would share to those looking to buy? So a lot, I just had a conversation with a company yesterday, you know, looking to scale, and they know they can only grow so much organically by opening new offices or hiring more people. They know at some point for the scale they're looking for, they need to acquire. And one of their concerns is cultural fit and integration and so forth, which, you know, naturally you hear all of these stories about that. But as it relates to your experience, what advice would you give either a company looking to acquire other firms, or if it's private equity, even looking to make an investment in a company, what advice would you have for them as they're making that decision and working with the people buying the company? What advice would you have for them?
So I'm in a unique position because when I started my career in Chicago, I was part of an organization that was purchased and then was purchased a second time. And from that second sale, we started my last company,
mm-hmm,
prior to McCann Partners. So I've been in a unique position to actually see three acquisitions,
mm-hmm,
all incredibly different. So I think it is important for the seller to understand what the buyer is after with the sale. Is it their process? Is it their customer base? Is it the fact that they're in a market? Is it their people? Because if you don't understand the motivation for the buyer, you may not understand the outcome on the other side,
mm-hmm,
and how to negotiate or better posture your role within what that looks like, right? So if you're buying an organization because you want the talent,
mm-hmm,
that's one very distinct reason. That might mean your process will go out the door.
Right.
If you're buying an organization because they have a presence in the market, you might remain the same. Or you might need to adapt and take on their systems and process. I've seen it go a lot of different ways. The first time we were purchased by a larger organization that did predominantly application development work and consulting. We were an infrastructure practice. Mm. They used us as a model to build that practice in other markets. So they left us alone. The only thing that changed was our back office system of payroll. That was it. The next time, everything changed. So I think as a seller, just asking those qualifying questions to understand what the buyer's looking for mm-hmm. as part of the courting and exploration process is really important.
And as a buyer looking to buy the company, to be very open. Honest about yeah. why they're buying you.
The last thing I would want as a buyer is to invest money, time, energy, everything to get a company and then have all of the people leave.
Right.
Right. So unless that's what your end game is, right? You have to understand what the end game is. So I think it's hard when you're doing the dance. It's like dating, mm-hmm. right? You don't want to play all your cards, but at the same time, you have to give enough so people can determine if there's a good fit right. on both sides.
Okay. Good advice. So we have been in the recruitment industry, and you have for over 17 years now. We talk a lot about the role of women in technology. Let's look at women in the recruitment industry. How have you seen women evolve in the industry? Or how do you think, what opportunities do we have to further promote diversity as it relates to recruitment?
I'm going to take the latter question because it's something that I talk about day in and day out with my customers. Because of our connection to ARA, mm-hmm. which is a group focused on women, most oftentimes I'm having conversations around diversity as it relates to males and females. There's many different varietals of diversity, but for the purpose of the question and how a lot of people talk to me or ask of me, it's women. And so when I look at organizations trying to make a commitment, I think, one, it is commitment. It's intention and purpose. And all of those things need to start at the top. It needs to be important to everyone. And as an organization, we have an opportunity to make a difference. We have an opportunity to be more intentional. I am a proponent of hiring the best candidate, whatever that candidate is. But if someone is really looking for diversity, they need to take a moment to figure out if they have the right pipeline. So we're only going to end up with more diverse candidates at the bottom if we're doing more at the top to ensure that what we have in the funnel is diverse. And so I think educating people that there's an opportunity for that to happen. But again, you need to start not when you get to your final two candidates and they're not diverse candidates. You have to start at the top to ensure you're doing the work up there so that hopefully when you get to the bottom, there's a greater opportunity for more diversity for women.
Right. Okay. Very good. So in addition to your day job, you spend a lot of time giving back to the community. It's a long list of groups that you're involved in. Just to name a few, there's Make-A-Wish Foundation, which you've been part of for years and years and years, in varying roles, including helping start their women's group here in Illinois, the Chicago Innovation, the Women's Mentoring Co-op Program, obviously ARA, which we've talked about co-founding. You sit on the boards of Lumity and IC Stars. You have just a little bit going on in your life. So there's only so much time in a day. How do you decide where to give back? How do you make a decision within what you're doing on which groups to get involved in and why?
It is purely selfish. It's organizations that I am really passionate about, many of which touch what I do every day. So my ability, therefore, to impact is, I think, greater because I'm talking to people that might be interested in benefit from knowing some of these other organizations, specifically IC Stars, ARA, Lumity. So when you're in front of technology leaders, those three organizations directly speak to a lot of the conversations that technology leaders are having around talent and hiring and diversity. So it's a really easy way for me to help the Chicago community by helping other leaders know that there are resources out there for diverse hiring, for promoting women. But it's selfish. It's as an adult being raised by my parents, my dad in particular would always, you've heard me say this story, Leslie, three things he would relentlessly pound into my brothers and my head. And that was, first of all, to have a firm handshake and always look people in the eye. It's respectful. To know that everyone puts their pants on the same way, one leg at a time. Does not matter what your role is. It doesn't matter if you are an attendant at a gas station, a barista, a CEO, a world leader. We are all human first. And then lastly, we need to find a way to give back to the communities in which we work and live. And I'm grateful to be part of a really vibrant, we are grateful, I think, to be part of a really vibrant tech community, a tech community here in Chicago, but also in other areas because of our connection with ARA. And so I feel it's essential that I do it, but I get a lot from it.
Right. You do work with a lot of different groups and you do have a passion for giving back as it relates to helping women, obviously. What do you see, even, you know, Chi Tech Academy, you work closely with them. What themes do you see rise to the top?
I think that the one that initially comes to mind is lack of confidence and fear. I think fear breeds self-doubt, it breeds a lack of confidence. And so oftentimes those two feelings will impact a person's personal and professional success. And so I, you know, when I look at ARA, we again talk about this with nieces, the importance for them to know that they are empowered and that, you know, they have so much opportunity out there and there's nothing that can get in their way except themselves.
Right.
And it's I can say that to you, but I don't always practice it. I can be my own worst enemy when it comes to that. But if we can do work to help Chi Tech, IC Stars, the women that are engaged with ARA, women that are part of our teams, our consultants, our families know that, you know, we're the only ones that can get in the way. You can let other people get in the way and you can let yourself get in the way, but those are decisions.
Right.
And so I think really working to help them know that they need to be confident, that's really important. It's right. Important for our boys and our girls as they're growing up. It's equally as important for my nephew, your son, right. Your nephew, as it is our girls. It goes across the board.
Right. I would agree. Wholeheartedly, I think confidence is probably the number one issue that stems or rises to the top that I see as well. And I think, you know, tying that back into the former question about giving back your time, and you have a self-professed superpower being a connector. So you spend time, like you said, you have pulled off being able to blend kind of this work and give back because the two are connected together. I think people often complain, I just don't have time. And what they often do then is they shut themselves out from building that network. And then as they have to find a new job or they get laid off or something happens, they don't have confidence to go back into the community. They feel a real disconnect from the Chicago community and the two kind of play hand in hand. So I love that you have that power, so to speak, of being this connector, but you make sure you spend your time wisely. You pick organizations that make sense to your business, and yet that helps, I think, for you, even as you build confidence and you know lean on that for yourself. That tends to play a big role, I think, in everyone, just to stay connected and push yourself to be connected. It's not easy. We've talked about this too. People, you know, think, oh my gosh, you're such an extrovert and you're a self-professed introvert as well.
Yes.
But having these connections, you know, you walk into these events and you would never know that. But it's because you walk in and people know you and they know who you are because you take the time to put yourself out there. And it certainly goes full circle. You then walk in and you're more comfortable because people know you and you know the people there. But
right.
I guess I mentioned this as being that connector and that tie into confidence is just spending that time and making sure that you make that investment to stay connected in the community because you just never know, you know, what can happen. I heard you speak at a General Assembly event. This was an emotional event. It was a Women in Tech event, but they gave you 5 minutes to speak. It was a lightning talk, and there were several speakers that day, and the topic you chose was a topic of fear. I was talking to someone the other day, a fellow entrepreneur, and one of the interesting things is that we live in paranoia. You know, just as you feel like your business is going well, God forbid something can happen. So you just live in this constant state of paranoia and fear a little bit. So it's kind of innate to a certain degree in us to be that way. So for you, one thing you talked about was a growing list of mantras that you created to keep fear at bay. And one thing you said was, be fearless. Witness what is possible when you fight for something bigger than yourself. What was the most surprising thing you learned about yourself, Megan, when you realized you could be fearless?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think that I needed to understand that for me, fear was based in comparing myself to others and comparing what I thought I wanted to what others had versus being comfortable understanding that my definition of success, it's success is a relative term, mm-hmm. right? So I could look at you or you could look at me and think everything is so successful, right? You have done amazing things with your career, with your family. You have been on many lists and recognized, and yet you said you never looked at yourself that way, right? So I think sometimes you need to first understand what success means to you and then realize that it goes back to believing, right? I think you have mm-hmm. to have blind faith. And it's interesting because I, as you know, recently had a freak accident with my foot and it has been a challenge. But I think about it sometimes in the context that there was a moment about 3 months ago that I was like, my gosh, there's so many bad things happening to so many people I love. When is it my turn? And I say that because it's like you will it to happen. Right. Now, is that true or not true? I don't really know. But I think you can, by the mindset that you have, impact what happens. And so I think struggling to work through fear and knowing that you have the ability to control it and put it at bay, and that you have to trust in yourself and find what your superpower is and not compare yourself to others and inspire other people. I think those are ways that for me, I've pushed through it. And again, I'm going to say it's not always easy.
Right.
But there is a path to it. I think you can take fear and turn it into fuel. And it's literally just sometimes a quick adjustment of your reaction or mindset to something.
Right. The interesting thing for me with you is that you, when you're coaching and mentoring people, and I've seen the emails and heard the feedback directly, you help them strip fear out of the job search or out of their career or where they're going. You're able to turn that into fuel and give them that confidence that they need to kind of go to that next level. So when you gave the presentation, it's like an epiphany when you realize this is the one thing holding me back. Yet it's the one thing you give as a gift to other people to take that fear away and what they're doing and such an important part of their life. So to conclude our podcast, sometimes I like to play the word association game. In this case, it's going to be more of a phrase or actually looking at your mantras. And typically, I don't tell the person I'm interviewing in advance what the words are, just to kind of catch them off guard and see what their reactions will be and get really candid and transparent answers from them. In this case, because these phrases I'm going to say are some of your mantras, they're going to be fairly familiar to you. However, you're super passionate about these. I want to hear, and I know the audience will enjoy this part of the podcast, what these mantras mean to you and why they are your mantras. So there are four of these. The first one is near and dear to both of our hearts. We did it today over lunch. make the ask. If you don't ask, you won't get yes.
So this is a nugget, is what I like to call it. I did not come up with this mantra on my own. It was something I heard one of our panelists say at an Aura event. And sometimes one of the things I love about what we do with Aura is, you know, mentoring, and it can happen in a lot of different ways. So this to me was one of those, it was like the light bulb went off. And the reason it did is because I always looked at myself as a great recruiter, great operationally, but as you already said, we live and die by sales and cash flow. And so for me, the ask, make the ask is all around that. You know, you have to ask for it, but what I've also really, really come to understand in some of the networking and mentoring that I've done is that most people want to innately help one another. So if they can, they will. And I think the same holds true with sales. If you can help them and they can help you, then it's not about sales anymore. It's about making the ask because you both need help. And so for me, that is a lot related to that function of my business.
Right. Very good. Taking risks. So this one I also know very well. It's the only risk you'll ever regret is the one you didn't take.
I think that's a close one because of Colin as right. well. I think everything about that has to do with your happiness. So I thankfully am not a person that has a lot of regrets. There are things that I may have handled differently, but I don't innately feel like I miss things because I didn't do things. But I do believe that if you don't take risks, you could impact your ability to be really fulfilled and happy.
Right.
So for me, that hits the happiness button.
Great. And those of you who don't know, my husband, Colin, has this as a tattoo on his arm to remind himself and ourselves really as a family and as professionals, because we are innately risk takers in what we do in our personal lives and professional lives, is that the only risk you'll ever regret is the one you didn't take. So I personally love that one as well. The third one we touched on a little bit, build confidence. So obviously confidence comes up a lot. Your mantra is build confidence, believe in yourself and your abilities, others will follow.
So this for me is the next generation. It's the women that we interface with from a business perspective, from an Aura perspective. It's my niece, it's my nephew, it's Grayson. I think that self-fulfilling prophecy, if you don't believe in yourself, you know, what you put out into the universe, you get back. And while it is still sometimes a struggle on that front, confidence-wise, for many of us, you have to put that out there because people will feel it, and that's why they're drawn to you.
Right.
You want to work with people that you believe in. So you have to believe in yourself.
First and foremost. Take control. So this is the final mantra. Take control. Don't rely on others to set your destiny. Make it for yourself.
This is McCann Partners. That was, I think, for me, the defining reason I started it is because I wanted to do something for myself, something that I could feel good about every day, that I could make an impact. So I didn't let that happen for me. I created the opportunity, and that's how McCann Partners was born.
And you and I know we coach a lot of people through Aura, and we actually had a session, I think it was at Northern Trust, that one of the roundtables we did was on setting your own destiny, making it for yourself. And the important thing here is if you hear yourself say, why didn't I get that promotion? You know, why didn't I? Did you make the ask? It goes back to the ask. And do people even know that this is what you want? And as you're waiting for others to take charge and do different things, you may be waiting a long time. And that's really unfortunate because you and I both have seen people go 5, 10, 15 years in a career that they hate, but they didn't have the courage or the confidence to move forward. So I love the fact that that's one of your mantras and that you coach a lot of women on that and that we cover that in Aura, because it's something that we see way too often. And I'm proud of you for, I remember the day you started McCann Partners, I'm really proud of you for taking that leap of faith in yourself and making it happen.
Thank you. It's Megan, 6 years.
I know.
This week. So thank you for, this is kind of brings like an anniversary. Full circle.
An anniversary podcast. Look at that. Megan, thank you so much for joining us. It's a pleasure to have you. People may be interested in finding you online. How could they reach you?
Well, thank you for having me, first of all, and allowing me to tell my story and share my journey. I think that's how we all learn from one another. And I'd love to hear from people. They can find me on LinkedIn. They can find me on Twitter at Megan P. McCann. And my email is lots of consonants, but it's mmccann@mccannpartners.com. And our website is mccannpartners.com. We'd love to hear from you. I'd love to hear from you and share a little bit more or help in any way I can.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum, T-A-T-U-M, at clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.